This is Vatican Radio, and I'm Susie Hodges. With more than 5 million Syrian refugees living in nearby countries, Collateral Repair Project is a charitable organisation in Jordan that brings desperately needed assistance to these refugees and other victims of war and conflict, those commonly referred to as collateral damage. Tara Sutton is a board member of the organisation, and she spoke to me earlier about the extent of the refugee crisis in Jordan. Let's listen to my report. The number of Syrians who have fled to nearby countries to escape the war in their homeland has now passed the 5 million mark. One of the neighbouring nations that have taken the largest number of Syrian refugees is Jordan, which is home to 1.4 million Syrians and a smaller number of Iraqis. The majority of these refugees do not live in camps, but in the capital Amman or other cities, where it's a daily struggle to find the means to feed and support themselves and their families. Collateral Repair Project is a charitable organisation in Jordan that was set up by two American women. It brings desperately needed assistance to these refugees and other victims of war and conflict, those commonly referred to as collateral damage. I spoke to Tara Sutton, a journalist and board member of the organisation, about the dire situation facing the Syrian and Iraqi refugees in Jordan, whose lives are now in a limbo.
Depends on which statistics you go by, but anywhere between 1 in 6 and 1 in 8 people living in Jordan now is a refugee. So you can imagine the strain that that has on an already poor country. About 80% of those refugees are not living in camps where they're basic needs are met, but they then sort of live in a very difficult situation where they have absolutely no control of their lives. So people tend to prefer to live in cities. If they were able to sell their valuables, if they have family members in another country that are sending them money, then perhaps their situation's a little better. But if people don't have any of that, within about 6 months of arriving, they've depleted everything. They've sold everything and are often living in bare apartments, and they have no idea where their next month's food or rent is going to come from.
And there's not much help coming from the government.
There isn't help coming from the government of Jordan per se, other than, of course, letting people live in their country, which I think is very hospitable. But there is help from large international organizations, but not enough. Donor pledges are not met. You know, when people go to the UN and they say they're going to send money, often only 50 or 60% of that money is actually sent. So there is not enough to go around.
I understand that quite a lot of them are highly educated. I mean, what percentage is that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that you'd find the same percentage of highly educated people as you would in any population. So it's hard for me to say exactly, but many people have advanced degrees, you know, just because war doesn't separate. You could be a doctor, you can be a laborer, and when war comes to your town, it's going to have the same effect, which is that you can't live there safely.
It must be a very demoralizing situation to be stuck in this kind of limbo, not allowed to work often, not enough money to live on, and with presumably very little chance of being accepted for resettlement in the Western countries. Do a lot of them suffer from psychological trauma?
Yes. I would say that a very high percentage, maybe 80% of people have severe post-traumatic stress disorder. And yes, the fact that they have no control over their lives leads to depression. You know, these are people that were used to, like you and I, getting up and having something to do in the morning and having control over our lives. And now they're in limbo, as you said, hoping to be resettled, although actually only about 8% of people are actually resettled. And many of them have gone through horrifically violent experiences in their homeland, which is why they fled. I mean, I think that people often think, oh, people are just leaving for economic reasons. Every refugee you talk to, it's like unpacking a box of terrible memories. It's really, I mean, from having family members kidnapped, from having children executed, from having their house targeted if they were seen as being on the other side. I mean, it's just endless. And they all have gone through this. And so that's one of the things I really like about the Collateral Repair Project's work is half of it goes to helping people with their, you know, basic needs of food and shelter and heat in the winter. And then the other half is rebuilding community and psychosocial support. You know, we have acupuncture groups, we have women's empowerment groups, we have groups for men to talk, we have all of these things to get people out of their home and reconnected and with the community, which is so important because they've lost their school, their neighborhood, their friends, maybe their extended family. All of those things that go with being settled in a place are taken from you. So it's really, really important, I think, that people can rebuild community.
You talked about some of the horrific experiences they've been through. Can you share with us briefly a particularly memorable or inspirational life story of some of the refugees you've come across?
Definitely. One of the people that I talk about often because his story is just so, I think, heart-wrenching, especially to a parent, is a man called Abu Nabil, who actually works at the Collateral Repair Project. And he was a lawyer in Syria. He was a human rights lawyer. And when the protests began in 2011 against the president, he started representing some of the boys who'd been imprisoned. Because of this, his house was targeted by a bomb, and his 12-year-old daughter was crushed inside the house. She was actually saved by the fact that she was in the bathtub, but she had a cracked skull. So they took her to the hospital, and when they got to the hospital, the doctors and nurses came and said, the army are looking for you. They want to finish her off. So he fled in his shirt sleeves with his wife and his little girl, Maria. And when we ran into him, he was living under a bridge in Amman. It was the wintertime. It was sleeting and snowy, and his daughter was in a coma, and they had absolutely no idea whether or not she would survive. We were able to help them find them an apartment and get medical help for Maria, and now she's better. She has scarring, but she's fine. And he is now a program manager helping other refugees that come to the center. He's the person that organizes food vouchers and calls people whenever there's a distribution, and is an amazing part of our community.
What percentage of these refugees would like to return to their home countries if the violence there were to stop?
I would say almost all of them. I don't think that anybody really wants to leave home.
Some of them, though, are not longing to go to the West?
Obviously, I think some people would like to go to the West, but I think that people in the Middle East in general are very rooted to their land. People there, for the most part, are attached to where they're from. Probably, people who think that maybe the West will give them better opportunities. I think if some people probably have fear that their country will never be stable. But overall, most of the people would just like to go home. They just want it to be safe. And at the moment, it's completely not safe for them. You know, they have no choice.
And what do the refugees themselves who've been assisted by your organization say about the Collateral Repair Project? Have you had some feedback?
We have. I mean, I think one of the best things about the Collateral Repair Project is that we draw our staff from within the refugee community. So there's always chances for people to volunteer and to get as involved as they would like to be. People say things like, we knocked on every door and you were the only ones that helped us. We've tried everywhere and nobody did anything for us. And then I think that the people who do choose to get more involved, rather than just getting food vouchers from us, that decide to start coming to all of the different programs that we run. We also have an after-school program for children. They feel that they have purpose again. You know, they feel that they have a place to come and meet people, that they realize that there are other people in the same situation as them, that they're not stuck alone, isolated in a foreign land. So I think that as much as this crisis is overwhelming, but when I go to the Collateral Repair Project, I always feel happy because I see people that are working together. They're struggling, but they're happy when they're there. We're always joking around. There's tons of cute little children screaming and yelling, and it's just a place that's very full of life. So at least on that small scale, I don't feel depressed or disheartened. I feel like I can see a concrete difference that's being made in people's lives.
I was speaking there to Tara Sutton of Collateral Repair Project in Jordan.